UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And a dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show. How are you all? I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Halloween is approaching and I'm looking for short 10 to 30 minute voice submissions for our Halloween episode. So if you have a spooky encounter, record it on your smartphone and email it to the usual address ufochronicles@gmail.com. And if we get enough, we will make a full episode out of it. On to tonight's guest. Arkansas is our destination, where we meet Stephanie, and she will be taking us through some of her unusual experiences. Stephanie, up next.
But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show.
Hello, Stephanie, aka the Snake Channeler, which you'll be getting into later. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this time.
Thank you for joining us today, and you're calling from Arkansas in the US.
That is correct.
Great hiking trails, I hear, around the Ozarks. Is that right?
That is also correct. There's a lot of hiking and a lot of mountain biking.
Getting that fresh air. Wonderful. Now, you have some experiences to share with us. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, ma'am?
Oh, geez. Yeah, I would love to start at the beginning. And I wish I knew exactly where the beginning was. I have had paranormal experiences for my whole life. And I assumed that tonight I would start with the first alien abduction I have the awareness of, which was in 2012. So I would like to precurse this with, before August of 2012, I was a person who would have said aliens, sure, in an infinite universe of possibilities, there's an infinite possibility of aliens. And in my hindsight, that was kind of a very nonchalant attitude for the spiritual and paranormal training and experiences that I had had leading up to this. But until August of 2012, I hadn't quite had an experience that shook my consciousness like this. And I think that it's this consciousness shake that really just acted as a catalyst for me to take a life that is very mystical and to ask a lot of questions as I continue to dive into ufology and alien experiences, encounters, abductions. And it's going on 11 years now, which is really astounding. It's, you know, what is time? But it really is amazing to me that so much time has passed with this subject, and I'm still just unveiling so much. It's just as fresh and just as, you know, inspiring and exciting to me as it was at the beginning. So I'll start with this experience, and then I'll also start to talk about some paranormal and alien experiences that I haven't spoken about very much. So I look forward to that. But in August 2012, I was by myself in a rural Nevadan house. I started to see darting figures in the reflection of the nighttime windows. I am somebody who prior to this, like, would have been like easy to scare during the nighttime. So I kind of assumed that I was just getting some midnight frights, but it wasn't midnight. It was just after the sun had gone down, and I was also entirely sober. So in my sober mind, I couldn't figure out why I was seeing these darting figures, and in a very unusual way, I started to not only see these darting figures going past windows, but I started to see darting figures going behind my head as if I had a eye on the back of my head, and I was seeing these darting figures go everywhere. At this point, I started to lose time, but I was taking the blinds down, I was trying to kind of conceal any of the reflective surfaces, thinking that I could just do some of my like type of energetic work to clear ghosts out of the house, and that would be that. So at this point, I was still thinking, I'm just going to bed. And when I closed all of the blinds in the house, what ended up then happening was I continued to see these darting figures in just everything that was reflective in the house. So the china cabinet, the dining room table, the granite countertops, it was like everywhere I look, I was seeing these darting figures. And that's when I really started to black out. So again, I was entirely sober. I was also alone in this house and at the base of the Ruby Mountains. I was going through this very scary phenomenon where I kept losing time and eventually waking up, and my cats would be staring at me like I was doing something pretty weird. These voices and these darting figures continued to just stir around me. And what they kept saying was, "We're here to take you away." And I knew that they were insinuating that they were going to take me away from Earth. It was a telepathic notion, and I protested. And you'll find that through my experiences, I really remain pretty sovereign. You know, I do not comply, although I experience quite a lot. And so they kept saying, "We're here to take you." And I would protest, and then I would black out again. So as I was waking up out of losing time, it was like I was waking up in very peculiar places. At one point, I woke up on the kitchen counter. At another point, I woke up just staring at myself in the bathroom mirror. It was getting really tiring. And I woke up from one of these time slips, kind of thought that I had come to my senses. And I was like, I just need to go into town and find somebody in the small town that I know and bring them back with me, and that will ease this. blacking out phase and panic and saying, no, you're not going to take me, had gone on for 24 hours. And at, I believe it was about 32 hours was when I left the house to just figure out what to do. I can't remember if I ate. I don't know what I was doing. I went into town and I found a friend and I said, hey, I know that this sounds really crazy, but there's something in my house that's trying to abduct me and I'm scared, but I also need to be at home because I have animals to take care of. Can you please come and help me? And he said, sure, yes, absolutely, whatever you need, which is very kind of him. I later married this man and I also later divorced this man. So I did get to know him quite well, which is an important detail for what happened. So I bring him back to the house and I'm like, this is great. I have this big, strong man here. He believes me. And now I'll finally be able to put this energy to rest and I can be at ease again. And it didn't quite happen that easily because within about 2 hours of him coming back to my place, he went to sleep very deeply. And these telepathic voices from these little beings, I say little because they were shorter, they said, nobody can save you. You're under our control. If we wanted to, we could take his life right now. And as they were saying this, he was gasping for air and sleeping as if he had sleep apnea, which after marrying him, I can guarantee you, he never slept like he had sleep apnea before. And these beings kept saying, look at this, we can take his breath. And I was just paralyzed in fear, in loss of what to do, in exhaustion. And when I continued to try to fight this and to not go wherever they wanted me to go, it's as if I had to tether myself to the earth by my love for this planet, and that love that I have for this planet was like the only thing they couldn't infiltrate. So I was draining myself just focusing on how much I love this planet and how much I really don't want to leave it. I eventually fell asleep. They did not stop threatening me until I went to sleep and I woke up and he didn't remember sleeping poorly at all. He thought he had slept quite well. We both remembered everything, but I was the only one who experienced anything or remembered experiencing anything. So after about 48 hours of this wild experience, I was terrified and exhausted, and I didn't know who to turn to. So I actually just began talking to a lot of people about this, and hadn't occurred to me until I started talking about it that this was an alien experience. And not only was it an alien experience, but it was nearly that textbook alien abduction story. And, you know, the more I read about these alien encounters and abductions, the more I remembered them poking and prodding over me and a light being above my body as they tampered with me and me continuing to just very consciously fight against it and not be taken away against my will. The conversation that actually ended up revealing to me that this wasn't a ghost, that this wasn't some sort of demon, that it was these gray aliens that we've heard about, was when I talked to my brother about it. He said that he had in this very house years prior. And then where we definitely differed was that he just said, why didn't you just let them take you? And I just said, well, why would you let them take you? We just displayed the same type of experience with an entirely different reaction. And that's really where my interest in ufology started, where my seriousness about what to do with these types of experiences kind of just started. And I immersed myself all of a sudden in alien abduction stories, books, podcasts, and, you know, Art Bell, Coast to Coast, everything that I could get my hands on to try to understand better what was happening. Since then, I've had a lot more experiences. Not all of my experiences have been horrifying. A lot of them have been absolutely enchanting and enlightening. For anybody who has had a very scary experience like this, what I came to understand that experience as, even though I don't wish to comply with those types of abductions, and I also wish that people weren't put into a fearful position like this, that what I did end up eventually learning was that this experience opened my consciousness up to the unknown in such a drastic way that I know that my soul and my personality would just have it no other way, right? Like, this was one of those experiences that was just so traumatic and so scary that it ended up ushering an expansive consciousness into my life, and it drastically changed me forever. So I hope that people aren't having scary experiences like this. However, if they are, I would just like to offer this notion that it's expansive, and you can also begin to experiment with your own spirituality and your own life as a mystic or as a curious person to invoke so many different kinds of experiences that, you know, if this very scary experience can exist that's totally outside of the box, then the very opposite of that also exists. And it wasn't for years until I would meet somebody who ended up teaching me that. In fact, even though I had grown up with a lot of spiritual ceremony and practice, I didn't have any tools to help me navigate this alien world. I grew up going to Methodist church, but I never quite related. I can remember being as young as about six and watching people at church and just really not understanding why everybody acts like that at church, and then they leave church and they behave in a different way. And I've always been so drawn to authentic expression and creation that this juxtaposition of how people behaved in church, it really never resonated with me. And when I was a kid, my family moved to Johannesburg. I went to public schooling. My parents were American, so, you know, they were out of their cultural norm, but I was a kid just flourishing in a culture that has 12 official languages, so many different kinds of religious ceremonies and spiritualities and magic. And when I was 11 years old, I was taken in by a Sangoma, which is a native witch doctor, and she was a famous Sangoma who would give free healings every Sunday. I didn't speak her language, but she taught me psychically. And so she would bring me into her healing room on Sundays, and I just knew to stand there and learn and observe. And she would perform exorcisms, and she would throw bones to tell people's fortune and to heal people's relationships. She would use different earthly elements to clear people of sickness, and I learned so much from her. I didn't know until recently that my parents had ever even seen her. I just would sneak over to her house on Sundays. Apparently, she saw my mom in a parking lot one day, and she approached my mom and she said, "Your daughter is the healer." I don't know how I would find this woman now. She's not somebody who would be on the internet. She doesn't live in the same place that she did years ago, I'm sure. But I owe a lot of my spiritual wisdom to the lessons that she bestowed upon me. I was 11, so I didn't know how special this was. I just knew that this was where I wanted to be, and I was just captivated by her magic practices. And after her, it was as if there's just something that's turned on about me that allows other ceremonial practitioners to know that I know. And so while my family was never into practicing mysticism or ceremonial magic, I was always taken in by a practitioner who taught me. So I had all of this teaching that built up to that night in 2012, but none of those teachings prepared me for aliens. So when I stumbled into an alien abduction like that, it really took me years to figure out what on earth to do about it. And my encounters with aliens also continued in Nevada until I left in 2014. I moved to Austin, Texas. So this entire time, 2012, and all of the stories that I'll include that are after this event in 2012, I have been living with my snakes. And my snakes are truly these guides who have always honed in on my telepathic communication and ability to communicate through dreams. I've always had a very deep connection with snakes ever since I was a kid. And I got my first snake when I was in my early 20s. I think that my relationship with my snakes and this telepathic wisdom that I receive from them is so much of how I've remained stable and resilient through all of these experiences. That being said, I have not always been healthy through all of these. These alien experiences and this consciousness awakening had a very rough effect on my health. And I actually, in 2015, with the accumulation of a lot of different life experiences, I was diagnosed with untreated Lyme disease that had advanced to a very severe limit, and it had gone undiagnosed for about 12 years. So this virus was active in my body until 2015. I eventually ended up in a wheelchair after a stroke-like episode. At this point, I was, I think, 25, so I was pretty young. I was otherwise very active and very social, and this virus had infiltrated my brain, had started to affect me on a cardio level. So I was dealing with a brain infection while also being in a wheelchair. I had at that point really turned off my spirituality in an act of just not having enough energy. I was going through a lot of medical treatments and looking for a lot of answers. I faced just basically being bedrest and in medical treatments for about 3 years. So I looked in all kinds of corners to find healing. It wasn't until I really started to open my spirituality back up to experience something mysterious again, to have unapologetic faith in just the universe, that my health started to come back. And it's not that my spirituality was the only thing, right? Like, I was seeing so many doctors. I was being treated with EMDR. My journey was very dense, but adding the spirituality and the faith to my experience allowed my health and vitality and energy to come back, which is when I started to visit Mount Shasta. For anybody who's listening, I would like to start talking about Mount Shasta by saying, I don't necessarily recommend it, in all honesty, even though the things I'm going to talk about are very stimulating. In my hindsight, I've noticed I'm a very curious person. I love going and finding answers. I kind of am like naughty, you know, like I love going and finding secrets and exploring things. But I don't necessarily think, in my hindsight, that many of these decisions were necessarily the safest. And so something that I say about my life quite often is, I did this, but I don't recommend it. You know, what I do recommend is just be yourself. You know, you don't need to go to any geographic location to find your consciousness expansion or your spiritual awakening. That just happens wherever you are, however you are, and however you are is perfect. However, Mount Shasta became a very regular character in my healing journey. So the first time I went to Mount Shasta was in 2017, and a lot of my experiences with Mount Shasta have accumulated into what I'm experiencing today. So my first time up this mountain, I set my intentions and I told the mountain that I was there to heal from Lyme disease, to rise to my highest potential. At this point, there was no inkling in me that said that I should do psychic readings with snakes. I was just trying to heal, and my work background was as a nonprofit coordinator and a college instructor. So I really was not pursuing doing psychic readings. I was simply pursuing healing and then rising to my highest potential. What ended up happening, I was given, quite literally, a machine that was calibrated to kill Lyme disease at a molecular level. And I was given this machine by a man who looked very Lemurian, who walked up to me in a crystal store and said, how can I help you? And I looked at him, and I, with this determination to heal, I looked at him and said, I'm here to heal from Lyme disease, to raise to my highest potential. And out of a outrageous leap of faith, when he said, oh, I have a machine for you, won't you take me home so I can give it to you really fast? I said, sure. And I gave him a ride home. And sure enough, he came out with a machine that was labeled with a label saying that it was calibrated to kill Lyme disease. And I left Mount Shasta 10 minutes later with this machine that I continued to use. I never saw that man again. I never reached out to him. I didn't have his contact information. And I don't know how human he was, but that's just how my first Mount Shasta trip went. And after that, I returned to the mountain about 30 times by myself to sleep and camp at the top of the mountain. I had listened to books and podcasts about the legend of subterranean city Talos that's inside the mountain, and And I had seen a lot of offers around town to guide people into it. But my instinct just said, go with a clear intention to go soberly, to go in a ceremonial essence, and to allow my experiences to be.
What is HelloFresh? With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. We all got a very busy schedule coming up this fall, and it doesn't always leave you with time to spare. With HelloFresh, you don't need to spend all evening in the kitchen to whip up a wholesome meal. With their quick and easy recipes and 15-minute meals, you can get a tasty dinner on the table in less time it takes to get takeout or delivery. That's why HelloFresh's menu includes 40 recipes and over 100 add-on items to choose from every week. We all wish we could spend less time planning, shopping, and cooking for the family and spend more time with them. From easy time-saving breakfasts and family dinners to kid-approved lunches and snacks, HelloFresh has what it takes to keep everyone, including you, happy and satisfied with America's number one meal kit. And when you get HelloFresh, you know you're getting top-notch produce since it travels from the farm to your door in less than 7 days. We have all suffered with the cost of living crisis, but HelloFresh has given me better management of my food budget and more time doing the things I love, spending time with my family and working on this podcast. So I have an exclusive offer for all our podcast listeners. Go to HelloFresh.com/50UFO and use the code 50UFO for 50% off and plus 15% off for the next 2 months. So again, go to HelloFresh.com/50UFO and use code 50UFO for 50% off plus 15% off for the next 2 months. Or click on the HelloFresh link below in this episode's description. So get started today with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit.
My experiences on that mountain are vast now, from super enlightening and super enchanting to super scary. And the super scary, again, is why I would also suggest to any of the listeners, be aware and be cautious. If you have a curious personality, sure. But know that from my experience, it's not always light. So that just is what it is. But I did end up going into the mountain. I was invited several times. I actually rejected the invitation to go into it a handful of times as well. And how this ended up happening was I would get to the top of the mountain and I would be guided to essentially go to sleep, to meditate. And so I would go into meditation very seamlessly. I was able to astral project and to hold the stamina to be able to experience my astrally projected reality as well as the reality of my body meditating during the experience. So I would be approached in my meditational space by who I was calling the Crystal Family, and they would introduce me to the gateway to go into Talos. And depending on my own meditational stamina and my own vibe and my own intuition about what was going on that night, I would either say yes or no. So sometimes I would make this, you know, some 8-hour drive to Mount Shasta and then say no. You know, sometimes these metaphysical, interdimensional, and technological experiences are similar to what I've seen my pilot friends behave like, where sometimes you pack up to go on a flight and you show up. Everything's packed up into the airplane, but you notice that there's an unexpected wind and you just can't risk the flight. And so you just say no. And that's a grace that I've seen my pilot friends maneuver themselves with. And that's definitely a grace that I give myself with mysticism, spirituality. It's never as planned as the ego would like it to be. That mountain seems to have quite a bit of drama in its frequencies. And so sometimes I would be invited, but I would notice, you know what? I don't have the energy or the stamina to maintain my cognition through going into the mountain. So I'm going to say no. And sometimes the vibes just wouldn't seem right. So I would just say no. And in any case, the first time that I said yes was one of the most life-changing experiences I've ever had. So I walk into this large open gate in the mountain, and they bring me into this subterranean city that is just exquisite. The essence in there felt like a happier, more loving essence than any of the emotions that we seem to know as humans. It was beyond bliss. It was beyond gratitude. It was beyond love. And everybody that I saw in there, which I saw just countless beings in there, were operating in this amazing essence. And their architecture is incredible. It's kind of a mix between a sea of ancient Egypt and a bio-architectural wonder that I don't know. I've never seen anything like it since then. Everything was food-bearing and functional. The walls grew food that I've never seen on the surface of the planet before, like a big lima bean type looking bean that was the size of a burrito. And I craved eating that lima bean for literally years after I ate this lima bean when I went into this city. But they took me through their city and the essence of this city and these apartments and condos, the warmth and the generation that facilitates this city is a solar energy at the very center. And the solar energy feels like our sun mixed with a little bit of something else. Maybe I have felt something similar to it with red light therapy and maybe with just infrared therapy. But this solar energy warmed and provided nutrients for the entire city. They just seemed to have it all in there. You know, there were amazing scientific looking devices. There was superfood harmony, and it was very beautiful. Another thing that they had in there was they had the legendary Pool of Eternal Life, which I had actually experienced on Mount Shasta before going into the mountain. But to see it in the mountain was just amazing. They have a very ceremonial looking large swimming pool that has this water of eternal life. And when you go into it, it blesses you with the eternal love, with eternal essence. And that water is like the consistency of Jell-O as it's turning into Jell-O. So it's a little bit thicker than water, but it's not as rigid as Jell-O. It's that in between. That was my first time into the mountain. I returned back to my body from this journey very seamlessly. I recorded everything that I had experienced, and I had this knowing to not interact with anybody on the mountain, any people on the mountain, that this was just such a sacred thing that if I told anybody what was going on, that it could possibly leave me a little bit a little bit more vulnerable than already being a lone camping woman on this mountain. I continued going to Mount Shasta, and my Lyme disease went into remission in 2018. So this entire time I was working very intentionally. For anybody that is right here with me and just step by step, yes, I'm just so grateful to have you here. And for those of you who are, what is she talking about? I just also want to thank you, because the audacity of these experiences is also something that has not really snuck by me, right? I definitely have one foot in both worlds. It wasn't until 2018 that I actually had some very scary encounters on Mount Shasta. And the one that I think is most important to kind of bridge into the next series of events is, there was one night that for whatever reason, I went onto this mountain without doing a spiritual ceremonial intention, without casting my clarity. It ended up being a scary night. So instead of going up there with clear intentions, I, for whatever reason, drove up that mountain listening to whatever music I was listening to, super loud, just partying, got to the top of the mountain and just went to sleep. I didn't really meditate. I was just so nonchalant. And the experiences that followed that night were scary. So I didn't even read what this night's experiences were before this talk, because I don't want to necessarily bring all of the essence back from this. But what I experienced was, I was abducted in my sleep, what I would call super soldiers. They worked for the government and they were soldiers, and they abducted me and they took me to an underground facility where people were being tortured. While they were being tortured, none of them were flinching. Nobody was screaming. It was a very weird scene. I had to keep my cool at these moments. I was definitely, you know, if we want to call this a dream, which I don't think it was, then I was entirely lucid. And I remember every moment of this encounter. I mean, I did when I woke up. I honestly tried to forget about some of it because it was just so traumatizing. I was taken into this facility and they were testing these soldiers. And my dad was in these facilities, or they knew my dad. And they said, "Isn't this genius?" I said, "What? What have you done?" They laughed and said, "Well, we've been stealing the technology from Talos and we have our own plans." And I said, What technology have you stolen?" They said, "Do you see what we can do to these people? And they don't even care." And I looked at these very tortured people. People had been beaten and they weren't fazed at all. What these super soldiers told me was that these people had been cast under the consciousness essence of Talos. And under that frequency of consciousness, nobody had the sovereignty of their own emotions and of their own care, that they were so disassociated from themselves and their bodies that they couldn't feel any pain. I was absolutely horrified, but also very trying to keep my cool because I didn't want to end up like these guys. And so, you know, I said, "Oh, that's very interesting. What else are you taking from Talos?" And they laughed and they said, "We're making an underground facility just like theirs that's going to be run off of their solar technology. And this will save humanity from the end of the world, just like it saved the beings of Talos from the end of the world before." I woke up that morning. I just felt horrible. I was terrified by what I had seen. It was beyond what I could possibly communicate to anybody in my life without causing distress. And so I just wrote it down. I just knew that I would remember the bits that I needed to, and that I didn't need to carry the trauma of that experience with me. I did continue going to Mount Shasta, but always with intention after that. And, you know, actually, the last time I went up to Mount Shasta, it just wasn't the same. It had a lot of feral people living on it, a giant music festival. When I went out there and I saw that, I remembered that the beings of the mountain had told me the mountain wasn't always in this divine spot that I had gone into the mountain and experienced it. It also had a shift. It's like the culture inside the mountain exists on a different time zone and speed than us. So they evolve and collapse and evolve and collapse in what seems like a much quicker fashion than we do. And, you know, linear time is just a choice of how to experience reality. So it's not that they experience time quicker or that we experience it slower, but we're just different. That's how Shasta essentially changed with me. It was then also in 2017, 2018, that at my home, I started to have these very interesting dreams that I had just never had before. And they were repetitive. And what would happen is that I would, in my dreams, find myself in a place that was dark and under construction and huge and vacant. And every once in a while, I would see somebody here. But I never really loved being there. This place has never really been my cup of tea. And I've always remained a bit lucid in this dream sequence. As time has gone on, I've witnessed more construction in this zone. So I'll bookmark that while I talk about another dream abduction or sleep abduction that I experienced in Denver in 2018. So in 2018, I was sleeping at my parents' house in Denver when I was abducted in, again, a very lucid dream state. In this dream, at the beginning, I was at a party and I was having a good time when a man walking directly toward me in an all-black suit and black sunglasses made eye contact with me, or telepathic contact with me. And he swiftly walked up to me and telepathically said, "I have a hit out for you." And I immediately tried to dodge him. Like, my immediate instinct was to run. He found me. He again said, "I'm here to kill you." He swiftly walked toward me and I tried to run. He found me. And on this third time, I just looked around to see if I had anybody around me to say, "Hey, this guy is trying to take me." And there wasn't anybody at this dream party that saw me. I just looked at him on this third time and I just telepathically said, "You will not kill me today." He just as swiftly walked right up to me and just, his shoulder hit my shoulder so hard that it still hurt when I woke up. He grabbed me and put me into a craft. So I'm in this craft that looks like an old pickup truck bed. And I'm in this craft with him who is just silent and only saying his mission in a telepathic voice, and a girl who is also dressed in all black, and she is very talkative. And she's not a girl, she's a woman, probably about 30. And she's saying, come on, just kill her. I don't know why you're not taking her out right now. You know that your job was to take care of her. So why don't you? I'm looking around like, where am I? How long is this going to take? Do the people at the party know that I'm gone yet? What's happening here? The craft lands at what they said was a Airbnb. And this Airbnb was probably about a 12-bedroom house that was packed with people about 10 to 15 years older than me, who were all wearing all black. I was wearing like a floral dress and a black leather jacket, but my like floral pattern was definitely sticking out in this party of people wearing all black. Didn't really know what to do. I mean, these people were really intense. They were drinking a lot. They were doing a lot of drugs. They were smoking a lot of cigarettes. And I was super sober at this time, didn't partake in any of this. And I kept wondering when somebody was going to notice I was missing. Around this party that I was abducted and taken to, I was noticing that the backyard had a screen on the far side of it, and what looked like a Portland neighborhood, which made sense. I was living in Portland at the time, would sometimes like go and it would kind of like fault out, and then it would turn back into this Portland looking neighborhood. And I knew that whatever was happening wasn't what it appeared to be. Like, I knew that I was someplace else. I just didn't know what this someplace else was. I talked with these people. They were very intense. They were all a bit older than me. Finally, I found what was called the batchmaker. This batchmaker was about, at the time, 65. He was very healthy and slender looking. He had a wife who was also very healthy and slender looking, and they were both seemingly quite wise. I went up to him and I just asked him, what am I doing here? I don't know what's happening. I was told that there was a hit out for my name and I've been here for hours. Can you please help me out? And he looked at me and he smiled. And he said, oh, yes, you have been a pretty controversial person over the last few weeks around here. And I said, why? And he said, well, you were a part of a genetic modification batch. Unfortunately, almost half of your batch ended up being faulty and not performing their purpose. But you, on the other hand, haven't been faulty. You just simply haven't fulfilled your purpose. I looked at him and I said, well, what is my purpose? And his wife came up to me and said, you'll remember. And she held my hand, and through her hand, I telepathically remembered that my purpose in this batch was to remain open about all of my experiences, that I would be a person who remembers all of my experiences. I would always be safe to talk about these things, even though it seems unsafe. And I thanked her, and they said, go and have fun with your siblings. Sorry, everybody's so much older than you. You really are the youngest in the batch. This will be the last time that you see all of your siblings together like this. But you will see them in one more party years from now when you'll know who's your sibling when they come into your life. I stayed with these, you know, I guess siblings of mine for hours and hours. I waited for the sun to come up. And when the sun started to come up and they were all so inebriated that they eventually like passed out everywhere, I went back to my batchmaker. I asked him to please just let me go home. And he said, oh, sure thing. I'll just call you an Uber. And he called an Uber. I got into this car and I was thinking on my drive home, oh my gosh, I hope that I haven't concerned everybody by being gone for so long. I was gone for so many hours. What is everybody going to think? And I'm going to show up and this is going to be so awkward because I'm going to be so tired. My car arrived to my house, and the second that I opened the door to go up to my house is when my eyes opened and I was in bed and fully rested. I really have taken that encounter or abduction quite seriously. I have had several Men in Black experiences since then. I try to remember that my purpose in that part of my life is to remain open, that these things happen and that I experience things and that they're continuing to happen. I did end up going to a very random Halloween party that ended up being my siblings. And I didn't recognize them, ironically, because it was Halloween. So everybody was dressed in a costume and they weren't dressed in all black. Some of my siblings are doing well and some of them are not at all doing well. This is part of this consciousness expansive experience that just is like, this is just one very small part, but also significant part of my very whole cosmic and consciousness experience. It's not one that I talk about very often, but I think it's important to talk about these kinds of things, right? So these dreams of this construction site continue to evolve through my sleep. And 2018 to 2020 was a very psychic and productive time for me. I was guided into starting to do what I call psychic snake readings with my snakes after my snake told me that she wanted to have strangers over for me to tell them what she's saying and then they would pay our rent. So that's where these psychic readings started, which was really I was so excited to have something new to offer after recovering from Lyme disease. And this was the thing that I started to offer. And unbeknownst to me and all of my other creative endeavors, this is the one that just really took off. So from 2018 to 2020, I was living as a very strict psychic with a very strict protocol of no sugar, no meat. I was eating vegan, gluten-free. I was sleeping in upwards of sometimes 15 hours a day. I was waking up at 4:30. I channeled a book that was published in 2019. I ended up doing a lot of dream work during those years, a lot of embodiment practice. I was also entirely sober during all of this time. And I was seeing a high volume of clients, which the psychic snake reading focuses on looking at somebody's auric fields in combination with Akashic records, specifically to usher unimaginable upgrades into the person receiving the reading. And so to receive so many clients at such a high volume during those years, I knew that something was about to drop in 2020. And I definitely was preparing for that, although I also had the instinct to not get to know what was about to happen with such clarity that I was concerning myself too much with it during those years. So, you know, I was staying as present as I could, but these readings, immense. And the number of people that we saw during those years was just absolutely countless.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Those dream experiences of the construction site actually continued so vividly that I could probably draw you a map of where I was walking, what I was seeing. It wasn't until 2020 the construction in those dreams started to really change. So at first, I was just kind of walking around there a little bit alone. Then by 2020, they started to offer me jobs there. So I would go to this construction site, and not necessarily by choice. I would just, like, my dream, just kind of like dreams go, it just starts and I'm there. They would start to offer me jobs in 2020. So at first they were offering me teaching jobs. They would say, oh, we have kids here and now we need teachers. And they seemed to know that I had teaching experience and they wanted me to facilitate lessons. And I rejected the jobs every time, just saying, no, I don't want to work at a school and I don't want to work here. The more that I kept going there, the more I would see children, the more I would see women taking care of these children, and the more they would ask me to stay. And every time I've just said no. But I've also met in my waking life other women who have been taken to these places, being told that they have babies there to take care of. And these women go back to this facility and take care of babies that either are or are not theirs. So I think that because of that, it's important for me to share this. But I also think it's so important to, no matter how curious you get, to remember and to retain and to experience these things, to trust yourself and to trust your experience. And just because you experience something does not mean you need to comply. I think that the human brain and consciousness is just opening up and activating so much that we're getting to retain information that we haven't had the accessibility to retain in our known past. And so just because it's happening doesn't mean you need to comply. And knowing your discernment for these moments is so vital. I continued doing a very high volume of readings, channeling with my snakes all through 2020. I do them full time now, but in 2020, I left my condo. I was needing to figure out a way to facilitate this channel to be able to show up as a healthy vessel for these readings. And that led me into mountain biking and into van life and into so much more exploring. Through 2020 and into 2021, I started to, through my travels, I met all kinds of people. I met nomads, I met small town people, I met the random people that you meet when you're on the road, whether that's at a gas station or a restaurant. But pretty quickly, I started to meet venture capitalists. I started to meet people in the tech industry. I went to South by Southwest and very quickly was invited to a Winklevoss twin party. I partied with Elon Musk. I started to experience these waking life social scenes that I just didn't have exposure to really before. I've always been somebody who very fluidly meets interesting people and influential people. But in 2020 and 2021, you know, it was, I would hang out and ride my bike around JPL NASA. And then I would meet a manager and supervisor for JPL NASA later in Austin. And it was, you know, all of my worlds were coming together, even though I was on the road and traveling like I was. It was when I started to meet certain people in these circles that my experiences in this construction zone dream would change. So for instance, I met this venture capitalist who he invests in large food corporations. We went to some food trucks one night and, you know, I just kind of thought, oh, what an interesting time. What a guy. I go back to my van, I fall asleep, and I'm instantly back at that construction zone. And that man is giving me a tour and everything is looking better. And he's like, hey, don't you think this is great? Won't you stay a while? I don't know what's happening here, but I don't need to stay anywhere. Like I'm doing fine. One of these encounters or one of these experiences, I was taken there, not by just like, bloop, now you're here, but by kind of a tourist perspective. So in this one time there, I was flown there on a tourist flight. What the flight said was, welcome to the moon. And it was this industry and this infrastructure that had been built on the dark side of the moon to act as a solution for overpopulation growth. In this one tourist experience I had there, they took me on a tour and they showed me all of the plans for the buildings and that the buildings are going to have infrastructure that's similar to our cities. So they said, expect to see everything that you want to and more here. We have schools and apartments and condos. We have universities. And one of their prized possessions, this infrastructure, is the missing artwork from World War II. Gustav Klimt and all of these amazing artworks. And everybody was so stimulated to be there. You know, even in that experience, I wasn't very into it. I thought it was too stimulating to be authentic. I didn't really love being there still. And I was energetically honest about that. What really stuck out was that there were different corporate owners of these different areas of the infrastructure. And one of the areas was owned by Walmart. One of the areas was owned by Coke. I can't remember the rest. But it was a conglomerate of the world's leading corporations coming together to create a interstellar moon city. We're going back to 2020 and 2021. I'm meeting all of these new people and I'm just riding my mountain bike around everywhere. That my mountain biking was really where I was being directed to go as I just continued to see all of my clients remotely. So, you know, I mountain bike through California and Colorado, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico. I mountain biked Roswell for several days. I mountain biked throughout Texas. Then I ended up coming to Arkansas to ride my mountain bike here. When the sun came up, I drove here by night, and when the sun came up, I was, oh my gosh, what a nice Walmart. And as a van lifer, I had come to judge a town by its Walmart parking lot. The nicer the Walmart parking lot, the nicer the town. And this was just the nicest Walmart I had ever seen. And I was like, well, now we're talking. And I went on some trails, and I liked the trails. I liked that everything seemed so safe here. As my experience and time here went on, I very quickly realized that I had moved myself to the home of Walmart, and I am very sometimes shoulder to shoulder in these restaurants and on the bike trails with the owners and heirs of Walmart now. And it's not just Walmart, it is kind of this area that I call it, it's similar to Hollywood, but instead of entertainers, it is just a hot pot of CEOs and entrepreneurs. So Shell Gasoline, O'Reilly Auto Parts, all of these entrepreneurs have gathered here, and they're making a new infrastructure. They have a ton of art, a ton of trails, a ton of food, and it is very stimulating. What I have noticed is that over the last few years, I've seen that technology that I was told in that abduction by the super soldiers on Mount Shasta, I've seen that technology being used by the elites. You know, Jeff Bezos has a clock that is going to, that's set to tick for 10,000 years that he's put into a mountain in Texas. And I'm surrounded by all of this buzz in Arkansas now. The people around here seem to have an effect of that consciousness technology that keeps people from caring. And there seems to be quite a bit that goes just swept under the rug. And, you know, I am in the South. So the South is, you know, kind of notably a little bit spooky. There's a little bit of a tendency to like voodoo here and kind of a different type of mystical practice that is kind of this counteractive thing of, around the Bible Belt. But there's something bizarre going on with the area here. What I've come to believe is that the beings in Mount Shasta are, they're said to be from Lemuria, but I actually believe that they are, a lot of them are from Atlantis. And I think that there is a lot of occult art practices that are summoning the technologies from Atlantis to boost society. So around here, I have hung out with Pentagon officials and family friends of the Rothschilds who have very casually talked about a global order and moving the world into a global currency. And so much of this is with a certain kind of spiritual tone to it that is very occult-like to me. And something that I have come to kind of like see as a kind of a cursor, a precursor of occult presence is just when you arrive to a place and you just you're just stimulated. And this is a very stimulating place. They have a concert stage that is built by the same architect who built the Denver Airport, which is notorious for occult and alternative practices, and music festivals that are very stimulating. And just, it's all very aesthetic. It feels like I'm living in a Pleasantville or like the Truman Show. It's very staged. Had me really reflect on a lot of different questions that I just wouldn't have asked if I was surrounded by authenticity and sacred sites. You know, I run into the woods plenty, into the Ozarks, and I experience the natural world as often as I can while I'm here. But one of the dinner parties that I went to with some of these elite people joked and said, well, you know how people have seed banks in preparation for the end of the world? And I said, yes. They said, well, we have a people bank. That's when it really resonated with me that the intention is to move people to the moon eventually. You know, we have a lot of creative elites right now moving their investments into the idea of colonizing space while figuring out how to build infrastructure and how to mine and how to source things from there. Now, I don't want to say all of that and I'm advocating for it or seem like I'm advocating for it, because I'm really just speaking from what my experiences have been. And I'm about to adjust the dial and go and surround myself with really ancient sacred sites and dive more into a like authentic and earthbound experience instead of this. Although I do think that it's quite valuable that I've been able to experience quite a bit of this too. I think that we're about to embark in a culture that very realistically has us wondering if we should move into a global world currency or if we want to try on the possibility of colonizing space. From my perspective, what I would like to offer this journey, this path, this possibility is that just because we're offered something in this amazingly dynamic world doesn't mean that we need to take it. That the universe seems to be in a growth spurt that is kind of leaving us feeling like we're not connected, but we absolutely are. On a very real level, we have an ability at every moment to choose an action of love or to choose an action of ego. The occult arts love to feed off of people who are not acting authentically. So I recently asked my snakes, I was like, oh my gosh, if somebody's not being themselves, who are they being? And the snakes just laughed and said, exactly. And so by choosing love, you're able to choose and discern from a place of self. And in preparation for the conversations that I've seen and that I've been in with these elite members of society and just traveling around experiencing what I can, it is going to be very easy to become so distracted that we don't know what we truly want. And so it's absolutely imperative right now to stay connected to a conversation with yourself. And that means taking yourself off of social media to have a conversation with you, whether that's sitting in front of the mirror for 10 minutes and saying, hey, just start a timer and say, hey, how are you? What can I do for you today? Or that could mean grab a pen and paper and just start practicing writing, just start practicing talking to yourself again so that these conversations are already happening in yourself. And when you're prompted with a great question, then you know very clearly from your selfness that you're going to make a choice that you agree with. I don't think that there's any right or wrong choices. I think that there's just simply choices that are great and aligned for you or that are not aligned for you. I'm certainly just so not somebody who wants to go and colonize space. That's just where I'm at. I really love this planet. This is the coolest planet. And I'm so happy to be here. With that being said, you know, when people start to press me into investing in a one world currency, I'm probably going to be the person who, like, instead wants to buy another goat and make sure that there's no fluoride in my water. I just am. That's who I am. Another thing that I think could be very helpful for just the preparation of coming into these new societal changes is taking time to either learn ceremonial magic or to teach the ceremonial magic that you do know, whether that's divination through tarot cards or candles or crystals. The power of human thought is valuable. People will do anything to keep us from our own thoughts, right? And to get us to think something else. Allow yourself to take a break from stimuli, from work calls, and from social media, and from phones altogether, and just return to some tried and true practices, because humans are just so much more than we've been taught. All of these things that I've talked about on this pod have been things that I wasn't told were possible when I was a kid. And yet here I am, 34. I've been in this for this like exploration for over a decade now, and it just continues to unveil more realms and more possibilities. And so humans are amazing, and we're capable of so much. And so, you know, hold on to the possibility of possibilities. Know that you're so psychic, and that nobody can really teach us how to activate ourselves right now. It's just about walking a path of mysticism and staying open to what your experiences will be, and to remaining connected to yourself, so that when you do experience the unexpected, that you know what you either want to comply with or what you don't want to comply with. Once we do that, we are up and over the zeitgeist. We are up and over the web of synchronicities and consciousness, and we're able to also influence it in the same ways that all of these other people are. There's nothing that truly makes any one person more advantaged than the other than empowerment and sometimes a cosmic experience and wisdom that has reminded us that we're so much more than we've been taught. I really appreciate this time to be able to share this all. It's a very rare and unique privilege to be able to do this. And so from the bottom of my heart, I just want to say thank you for being here. And, you know, I'm a psychic. And so I've been able to feel your presence here. And it's such a privilege and an honor. So my name is Stephanie, and I am the psychic known as Snake Channeler. And I channel and transmit information with my snakes to usher people into their most direct path of unimaginable upgrades. And I would be absolutely honored to hold a channel for you. So I'm absolutely available for that. You can find me at snakechanneler.com and on most social media platforms as Snake Channeler. I just really appreciate time and this trust. Thank you so much. And I am wishing you easy, unimaginable upgrades as we move forward, over, and beyond the zeitgeist.
That's wonderful, Stephanie. Of course, you referred to the beginners as a snake channeler. Now, snakes, they are feared, but they're also revered around the world. You can channel them. You can learn stuff from them. They tell you, I guess, what they want to eat, what they want to do. So people can reach out to you and request a reading.
Absolutely. I am here for anybody who is feeling enticed and who is interested in working with us. And yeah, my snakes they're really incredible. I love snakes. The snake that I work with in particular is the limitless serpent from Naga called Shesha Ananta. And the snake spirit has been with humans since the beginning of our journey here. And the snake is just specifically invested in invoking a limitless consciousness into humanity. And they have very cool stuff to say. They're funny. They're like oddly practical, and they're deeply wise. And I always learn as I channel, and it's always a fascinating journey.
Do they say things to you like, buy a furry pet?
One of them, yes, because he does actually like cats. One of them, no, because he doesn't like anybody. They eat regularly. They're not life-threatening to humans, which is great. And they do prompt me to do silly things often, actually.
So they have a good sense of humor. In fact, actually, my cat left about 5 minutes ago.
Your cat wouldn't have appreciated that joke. I think that what allowed me to be comfortable with the idea of going into Talos was that I had already done so much research into Naga, this serpent humanoid city underground, right? And I've always been soothed by the either notion or remembrance of Naga.
Right. I mean, I've been to, in Southeast Asia, I've been to Naga temples, and they are believed to inhabit the Mekong River. And every year they have like a Naga festival. And what happens is these fireballs shoot out of the Mekong. And it's been happening for generations now. And you can go up there and you can witness these balls of light. They've had scientists there trying to find out, you know, what's causing it. You know, still to this day, it's still one of those unknowns.
That is so enchanting. This world is so filled with mystery. I'm so curious, and I love how curious you are about the world too. I've never seen those fireballs, and now I want to see them.
The world's a wonderful place, but there is so much to see and do. And mm-hmm. and good on you for getting over Lyme disease. Now, to our listeners, if you're not too sure what Lyme disease is, you can catch it via ticks.
Yes.
So, you know, if you're out traipsing in the wilderness and through the grass, just be careful if you do notice any strange marks on your body. I think ticks, they give like a bullseye markings on the body. Is that right?
Exactly. And there's a very specific way that you want to take them out if they've bit you. And, you know, I was a kid when I contracted it. And so as a kid, I just had no idea. And I have no recollection of a tick. You know, it was just doing pretty good one year. And then another year I became sick. So, yeah, but great to have that disease in remission. And if you do get bit by a tick, take it very seriously and definitely figure out how to take that thing out the proper way.
I must admit, I've taken ticks out of dogs before. We had a dog a while ago and he got bitten and the tick was burrowing in, so you got to extract it via try and take the head. But yeah, nasty business. So
totally
beware when you're out in nature. Nature's beautiful, but there's a lot of things which can cause you considerable harm.
That's so true. Both the seen and the unseen world.
They go hand in hand.
Totally.
That's wonderful, Stephanie. I really appreciate you coming on, sharing that for our listeners.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I appreciate you and looking forward to everything.
No problem. Take care and enjoy the rest of your night, and we'll speak soon.
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye for now. That is all for this episode. Keep updated and connected with the show on X, Facebook and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Stephanie for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.